The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
This is the sound of New York City yesterday. A Uzbek immigrant rented a Home Depot truck and entered the West Side Highway bike path at 3:05 p.m. yesterday afternoon. He drove for 17 blocks, mowing down absolutely everything in his path. After it was all over, 8 people are dead, 15 seriously wounded. The attack probably would have been a lot worse had he not crashed into a school bus, ending his terror drive, but 2 children were hurt in that final crash, 1 critical condition. Then he jumps out of his truck, and he's holding a gun, but it's a BB gun or a paintball gun. The words "Allah Akbar" could be heard coming from his mouth. Suicide by cop is what he was trying. But as is this morning, he is out of surgery and he is alive. Police searched the truck. He had an ISIS flag and a note pledging his allegiance to the group. America, this is our reality now. A reality our kids have grown up in for over a decade and a half. A decade and a half. If you're 15, you don't know a different world. A world where if you go to a concert, you go to a public gathering, you ride a bike, you have to pause and ask yourself, what do I do if a terrorist shows up? It's a different world. It's the new norm for our kids. Is that right? And what are we doing about it? Arguing about politics? These attacks are going to become more frequent and continue to come out of seemingly nowhere. And that might be the scariest part of this new era in Islamic terrorism. The terrorists are adapting to our security measures. Anybody who says, we got to ban guns, really? Are we going to ban trucks now? Things like explosives and guns and anything else that might draw attention. The new era. These terrorists are completely invisible. They're ghosts. This Uzbek was a legal immigrant. He was a business owner with 2 trucking companies, an Uber driver in good standing. He had 0 digital footprint, 0 social media accounts. How do you prevent this one? Well, unless you want to get into Minority Report. There's no way. Well, actually, in this particular case, we could modify our immigration policy. And our policy here is this guy won a lottery to come to the United States. Literally a lottery. Enough is enough. Can we begin to fix this? I mean, how do we fix it when one judge has the power to override national security policy? This is ridiculous. We don't hate anybody. I want the people from the Middle East that want to get away from people like this. I want them here. They can help us. Something has to be done, and the partisan politics need to be checked at the door. And yes, I'm looking at you, Ninth Circuit.
It's Wednesday, November 1st. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program. Mm.
Here is de Blasio, the mayor of New York, yesterday. He says, America... You should know New Yorkers are resilient. Listen to what he said.
Based on the information we have at this moment, this was an act of terror and a particularly cowardly act of terror aimed at innocent civilians, aimed at people going about their lives who had no idea of what was about to hit them. We, at this moment, based on the information we have, we know of 8 innocent people who have lost their lives and over a dozen more injured. We know that this action was intended to break our spirit. But we also know New Yorkers are strong, New Yorkers are resilient, and our spirit will never be moved by an act of violence, an act meant to intimidate us.
Okay, stop. I mean, is, you know what breaks my spirit? You know what breaks my spirit? The lack of common sense. That's what breaks my spirit. I think that's what breaks the spirit of most Americans. Most Americans know we're never going to be able to stop this, but there are things that we can do. There are definitely things that we can do that curb this. And it has nothing to do with politics. It has nothing to do with hatred of a race or a religion. Those will only make things worse. But using common sense principles, I mean, would anybody say we should ban trucks? No. Do you know what Chris Cuomo said on CNN this morning? Chris Cuomo came out and said, this is the biggest terror attack since 9/11. No, Chris. No, it's not. You see, he dismisses things like Fort Hood as a terrorist attack. That was a gun problem. That was a terrorist attack, Chris. And until we can actually have the conversation, well, let me show you another piece. This is from CNN. They know who the guy is. Now, quite honestly, when I heard that it was a truck that plowed into people, I honestly thought that's got to be either a guy having a heart attack, or this is some guy from the middle of the country pissed off at somebody because nobody has a truck in New York. And I was kind of right. Home Depot has trucks in New York and they rent them out. But we knew who this guy was rather quickly. Here's CNN.
And so now he's at Bellevue Hospital. Police know who he is. They have a description of him. I'm not going to share that at the moment.
Why?
But they know who he is.
Why?
He is alive at the moment. And basically, it looks like, you know, they're going to try and talk to him. I'm going to stop right there in terms of all the information. But that
Why?
Is what we can report at this moment.
Why? 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 If the guy was from the South and in a truck and he had a Confederate flag in the front seat, do you think that CNN would not have reported that information? Do you remember when we used to hope that it was a foreign terrorist and not some crazy crackpot from the United States? Do you remember when we used to hope that it wasn't one of us? Now it's like the media does everything they can to make him one of us. They almost hope that it is one of us that has done something like this. Why does the media think that hatred starts and stops with white people? Why is it they can lecture us on hatred constantly, every day, talk to us about hate crimes, and yet when it comes to an Islamic terrorist, they don't want to talk about hate crimes. They don't want to talk about how much these people hate us. They can't bring themselves to put this class of people into the same class that they put almost every white person every single day. Why? Why? The only thing that breaks my spirit is living in a country where I know 200 million Americans get it. I know they do. They know. And yet we're bullied around by what? Maybe a million Americans? A million? Who none of us would agree with. All of us would look at them as individuals and go, "You're nuts, man." But because they're in positions of power, or because they can create any kind of Twitter storm, we kowtow and we become silent and we allow people to speak and act in our name and conduct themselves without any common sense whatsoever, and we just take it. Here's what happened yesterday. A guy who hates us. A guy who is so racist that he puts all people, all races. If you're a United States citizen, if you're somebody who likes freedom, let alone you're somebody who loves Jesus or just doesn't love Allah, he hates you. He believes you aren't even human. You are subhuman. And so he has the right from Allah to be able to do whatever it is he wants to do. And if he chooses to enslave you or use you as a sex object, he can. A guy yesterday went into a Home Depot and rented a truck who has more perverse ideas of what he can do to individuals than Harvey Weinstein ever had. And instead of enslaving women and molesting and raping them every day because Allah says he can, what did he do? He rented a truck and he decided just to kill people with a truck. Now, why did he use a truck? I mean, I thought it was so easy to get an automatic weapon. It's not easy to get an automatic weapon. It's not easy to get a weapon. He had a BB gun or an airsoft gun because he wanted the police to shoot him. Well, if you really want the police to shoot you, actually have an AR. Actually go out and shoot. He couldn't. Yesterday, everything the left says they're about, stopping hatred, they turned a blind eye yet again to the biggest force of hatred on the planet. And it is time for us to say enough is enough. Casper gave me another great night's sleep last night. I know I sound grumpy, but I'm actually not. I had a great night's sleep. Tanya and I were one of the first to have the new Wave mattress from Casper, and they sent it about a month ago. And we put it up, and I told you at the time, the first commercial I did, I think Casper probably was pissed at me because I was like, I'm not sure I like it. And I was being honest, and I tell all my clients, I'm not going to advertise if I don't like it. And I told them on the air, I'm not sure I like it because I don't want you going out and taking my word for something that I don't like. This is a patent pending support system that mirrors your body's natural curvature for a deeper and more restorative sleep. And what Casper told me they did was they created a new top layer that gives you the support. And it's made for people who have real pain, shoulder pain, hip pain, knee pain, because of that Wave, it helps you sleep. Well, the first couple of nights, I wasn't sure I liked it. Tanya wasn't sure that she liked it. I absolutely love my Casper. It took about 2 weeks before I started getting up going, I didn't wake up at all. Casper Wave mattress. It's a breakthrough in sleep from the leading designers and engineers in the field, and it's from Casper. I want you to go to Casper right now. You can try it out in your home for 100 nights risk-free. Go to Casper.com, use the promo code Beck, and you can save $75 on your purchase. That's Casper.com, promo code Beck. Minimum purchases required. See site for details. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Stu and I were just talking about how sad it is that that monologue will be considered by some as controversial.
Well, I mean, you know, the most hateful people in the world were in Charlottesville, not Syria.
No, I would put them in the same category. I would put them in the same in the exact same category, except the
I would say the exact same category.
Well, the of hatred.
I guess of hatred. I don't know if danger, right? I mean, like people have killed, you know, how many people around the world tried to take over nations. I don't know that the alt-right has done that.
No, the difference between the Nazis.
But real Nazis, I guess. Yeah, you go back to the Nazi days.
You have to go back to the Nazi days.
Yeah.
But I think that those people will do it anyway.
They would if they could, I guess.
Yeah, so
fair to put them in the same category.
Yeah, I'm talking about the category of hatred. I'm not talking about the category of danger.
Right.
I mean, I think if you look at the category of danger, there is no one on earth today that is more dangerous than Islamic extremism. There's no category that even comes close to that for danger, is there?
Yeah, I mean, not really. The only thing you could talk about is the nation states, nuclear war, things like that. But I mean, really, I mean,
when it comes to people that can affect us and and, you know, we're not playing footsie with North Korea. Look how strong and united all of us are on North Korea. We all recognize North Korea is a threat. Where we divide is, you know, first strike. No, I don't think so. You know, and how we are going to deal with it. But we all admit that that is a grave threat. And this is a twisted, dangerous ideology. I don't think we are all there. I think it would be like taking North Korea and saying, you know what? But the North Koreans have a really good point. I mean, look at what United States did to North Korea. No.
I don't know what motivates that either, because it's interesting in that I think it might just be the typical political alignment where one side is strong on something, so the other side has to be lenient on it. But it's like there's no reason for the left to be as lenient as they are with Islamic extremism. This is a fundamentalist religious group. Yeah. They can't stand every fundamentalist religious group.
I know.
This is a group that hates women, that hates gays, that hates everything else they stand for. But for some reason, when it comes to Islamic extremists, there's constant excuse making. It really makes no sense.
And here's the problem. We're only going to get better as a nation if we, first, take the beam out of our own eye. So stop excusing people on your side doing things that you think, that you know, if the other side did it, you wouldn't accept it. Stop excusing that. Take the beam out of your own eye first. Then, stop accepting other people doing it. You don't even have to fight them. I'm sorry, but you're completely wrong, and I love you, but you're completely wrong. You don't have to argue and fight. It's just time for the majority of Americans that know the truth. We do not hate people of different religions. We do not want to wipe all of Islam off the map. I am not a racist. I just know there are people that are members of Islamic extremist groups and mosques that hate our guts and want us dead. I'm not going to look the other way. And I'm not going to not say those things. I'm not going over the cliff with the rest of humanity. Sometimes going over the cliff means that you just start adopting crazy things and you start saying and backing crazy things. Other times you're going over the cliff because you're silent. You're not saying anything. And we have to find a way to not ratchet up the political divide. but still be on the record standing as a clock in the room going, sorry, that's not common sense. Sorry, that's wrong. Sorry, that's wrong. I know nobody here wants to hear it, but that's wrong. You don't have to get brutal. You don't have to start calling people names. You just have to state the facts. And the quieter you state the facts, the more effective you will be.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
If you happen to be watching online, what I'm holding up here is a certificate of sale. The fingerprints that you see, the blue fingerprints, those are the fingerprints of the woman who is sold. This is from a slave auction. This is from a slave auction that happened in August of this year. And it happens to be of a Christian woman who is 20 years old. She had been taken by ISIS. She had been sold into a family. This is a transaction between one brother to another. He had used her and abused her, and he had his fill of her, and so he sold her now to the brother. And the brother was raping her on a daily basis. This is the hatred of ISIS. This is what's happening. This is a Christian woman. The reason why she could be taken a slave is because she was Christian. That's it. That's it. She was subhuman. I will have you know that because of you, this woman was rescued. Because of Mercury One, we found her and freed her about 6 or 8 weeks ago. We are going in and rescuing these women, these children, and then we're giving them aftercare treatment, because coming out of that is not easy, especially in that part of the world. I would like to ask for your help. Mercury One is having a raffle. And they are having a dinner. We have our annual gala. And what I do every year is I put on a gala with Mercury One, and Tanya and I host it. And the Norrises are going to be there, Chuck Norris and his wife. And some other invited guests are going to be coming. And we put on a big spread, and we have a big auction and everything else. And we do that to pay for all of the business end of Mercury One. So that way, when I say I want to raise money to save these women, all I can say to you, every single dime goes to that case. When I say every dime will go to the people in Houston. Now, I don't know of another charity that does this, but I always want to give you something in return when we're trying to raise money for the business side of Mercury One. And so this year we're giving away a brand new truck. Do you have the information on this? We have given a brand new GMC truck out, and it's a raffle. The tickets are $100. You can enter more than once, and the drawing is going to be occurring during our annual fundraising event, which is November 18th. You don't have to be present in order to win. In fact, somebody is always not there who wins it. Go to mercuryone.org/M, the number one ball, mercuryone.org/M1ball. You can grab your raffle ticket to buy or to be able to get this new GMC Canyon pickup truck, $100 a ticket. Also, you can join us if you'd like to. You can grab a couple of tickets to come to the M1 Ball. This year, Aaron Watson is going to be performing, and the tickets and information available at mercuryone.org.
It's important that you sacrifice a little bit and are willing to win a truck to help people. I know I am. And, you know, I think you should take a step in that direction as well. Look, we're all, I'm not going to say I'm better than you. I'm not going to say I'm more giving than you, but I would take a truck for free to help people.
You
That's
will do that.
That's the type of person I am.
Wow, you go the extra mile.
Wow.
So you bought a raffle ticket.
I will be, yes.
You
I have not yet.
I want the receipt. I want the receipt. I'm gonna ask Mercury One to call me when they see your name on the raffle.
Can I expense it?
No, you can't. Okay. I'm paying for it.
Well, no,
you can't do that.
I'll take the truck. You just take the...
All right, so today is the day that the House was supposed to come out with their Republican tax plan, but this thing is falling apart again, and they are not coming out with their tax plan today. What has happened, Stu?
So I think, I mean, there's various things that are happening. Obviously, I would think they're not saying this is part of it, but the fact that there was a terrorist attack yesterday, I think might be separating focus.
Doubt it.
They're not saying that. So just so you know, but I mean, I think that might be a reason and they want people to focus on this. And obviously it's not the focus today. They're saying that there have been a lot of changes to it. There have been a lot of requests and some of them we've outlined already from people like Susan Collins, who
wants to take the top tax rate at 39.6 and move it all the way down to 39.6,
which is incredible if you think about it. What an amazing gesture that would be. Now this is the House one that we're talking about.
Yes.
So it's not Susan Collins here, but she wanted, you're right, 39.6. She wanted no elimination of the death tax. These were things basically she was saying, these are required if you want my vote. Now in the House, it's going to be easier to pass a tax bill, you would think, than the Senate, because you can only lose two senators, and Susan Collins basically has not voted for anything that has been proposed by a Republican since 1984. So she's very difficult to keep. They are chasing her and trying to keep her on board for this one. So they're giving a little of her. They're trying to grant her requests, I guess is the way to say that.
Yes.
It's interesting, though, with the House one, in that they had so many, apparently, changes to it last minute that they're having trouble getting it into legislative form. So
do we know what these changes are by
chance? No.
You know, there's a story from the Cato Institute that individual income tax rate is too high. No.
It's a pretty incredible story, because this is not something that I knew, because there, you've heard this before when it comes to corporate income tax, where they say that we have the highest one in the world. And of course, that's pretty much accurate. Sometimes it's reported as second or third highest in the world. And it's one of the reasons Trump wants to cut that about in half. This is they actually studied the Economic Freedom of the World report, the Cato Institute did. It goes back to the 70s, and they have 80 countries with data on the highest income tax rate.
Now listen to this. The Economic Freedom of the World report published tax rate data for more than 100 countries back as far as 1970s, but with numerous data points missing. I found 80 countries that had data back to 1985, and below I chart the average top individual tax rate for that group. The countries with subnational income taxation, the EFW report includes a range of rates reflecting the various taxes in the states or provinces. For that chart, I chose the highest subnational rates for those countries. In the United States, the U.S. tax rate for 2015 is the federal rate plus California. So they went in and they looked at who has the highest state or province. And the country highest tax.
So it's an apples to apples comparison.
Correct. The average top individual tax rate for 80 nations plunged from 60% in 1985 to 35% in 2010. Then in 2015, edged up to 36%. The U.S. federal rate was slashed sharply in the 1980s, falling from 59% in 1985 to 42%. In 1990, still higher than the other 79 nations. Our top tax rate went back up in the 1990s, then down in 2000s, and recently reached 51% in 2015 as both federal and California rates increased. Meanwhile, the rates continue to fall around the world in the 90s and the 2000s until the tax cutting trend tapered off in recent years. So the United States is now at 51% for state at state, local, federal taxes, and it is at 36% in the other 80 industrialized nations.
That's incredible. By the way, the largest gap in the history of this study.
You look at the chart, and it is absolutely phenomenal, the gap between 36 and 51. What are we doing?
And they're going to, these are not going down. I mean, as the Republican tax cut package includes a tax cut from 39.6 to 39.6%.
When you look at, Russia with a tax rate of 15% and the free America with a tax rate of 51%. When we have 5-1 and they have 1-5, something is seriously wrong. And by the way, what is seriously wrong is our education system. So there has been recent breaches of credit bureaus, and a lot of people don't know what to do. You can't freeze your credit. That is not going to protect you against the identity fraud threat that arises from this data breach, because it is everywhere. Hackers get access to social security numbers and birth dates and driver's license, and they can use this personal information to commit crimes in your name and then even wipe you out, your 401k, your bank account. It can all be gone. Now is the time to get protection and sign up for LifeLock today. I remember, I think this started in the 1980s or 1990s, and I remember thinking, I don't need, like, you know, what is anybody going to steal from me? Oh, they don't have to just steal your money. They're stealing your identity. And, you know, before our kids actually get a paycheck, people are going out and they're getting our children's identity, because it's dormant and you don't know anything about it for 15 or 20 years, some kids 35 years. And once they start to file, you know, and get a wage, that's when they realize, no, somebody's been using my identity the whole time and their identity is crushed. If there is a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock is the best. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. That's 10% off your LifeLock membership if you use the promo code Beck. 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
We want to say hello to our affiliate, News Talk 580 and 95.1 FM, WGAC, in Augusta, Georgia. Thank you so much for carrying the show, and thank you so much for listening today. We appreciate it. I want to play this Chris Cuomo worst terrorist attack, I want to give Chris the benefit of the doubt that he's not saying that this is the worst terrorist attack in the United States since 9/11, but see what you think.
We are in the shadow of the World Trade Center, a place that stands as a symbol of resolve, but also such profound victimization. This is the deadliest terror attack in New York City since 9/11. That bears remembering. And in fact, we should never forget.
So the worst terrorist attack in
New York City. I think that's right.
Okay.
I think he's right.
I guess he is there. I don't know that there's been a worst terrorist attack in New York City since 9/11.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting...
Is that the clip you heard? Because you came in this morning all fired up. Is that the clip you heard?
I guess so.
Okay.
Maybe it was. Yeah.
It's amazing how we sometimes hear things, because we all do it. People on the left do it, and people on the right do it. You know somebody, you know where they're coming from, and you hear it, and you're like, no, I swear he said that. No, that's not exactly what he said.
Probably fair. I will give you, yeah, if you want me to give you more bad Chris Cuomo clips, I'll do it.
Oh, no, no, oh, okay. No. I mean, there's a reason why I immediately agreed with you. I wanted to get the clip, but I immediately thought you were right because, A, you usually are, and, B, he usually is a moron.
Yeah. No, it's true. And, he's sometimes fine. But, I mean, he, you know, that is it's a weird phrasing, I guess, of it. The worst terrorist attack in New York City, I guess.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's weird.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you put yourself in New York City in the shoes.
I mean, these are New York City people, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
these are New Yorkers. So. They're New Yorkers. They don't think of the rest of the country always. You know, if it happens there, it happens. Mm-hmm. If it happens across the river, I'm not sure if it's real or not. I mean, it's, you know, there's this weird thing about Manhattan that when you're in Manhattan, that's the whole world. That is the whole world. You don't want to go across the river. But people would say it's so weird. You fall into it so quickly. You know, it's happening in New Jersey. Oh, I don't want to go all the way to New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey, the east side.
Yeah.
If you're on the west side, to go to the east side seems like.
You can literally walk easily. I could walk from the west side to the east side and you don't do it. You're like, no, that's crazy. That's. What, you want to go to Alaska next?
Yeah, like I have a friend who constantly has business in like Singapore, and he's like, he works for a big hotel company, so he's all over the world. And I think of the same way about his flights from Dallas to Singapore as most New Yorkers think of going from the west side to the east side. Like, it just seems like that's an impossible task. Can humans do these things? That is really the way it goes. But yeah, now it's a different culture there, obviously. But I mean, giving him the benefit of the doubt there, I think he's obviously, I can't think of it. There have been other, certainly plotted attacks against New York City. But I mean, if you're talking about actual deaths, that probably does apply.
Today, it looks like Google and Facebook and Apple are going to be testifying about... What did they know and when did they know it and what they are going to do to stop countries like Russia from influencing the United States? This could have profound impact on all of us and freedom of speech. And we're going to talk to one of the former Google ethicists. I didn't even know they had them. I'm glad to hear they did. This guy left because he was like, no, they don't get it. But he's going to be on with us and tell us a little what to expect and what to watch for in Washington today.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
You got kids in there?
Yeah.
All right, hold on.
This is the sound yesterday in New York City.
Okay? Can you tell what happened?
As an Islamic terrorist.
They're stuck in here.
Are you okay?
There's a sound behind there.
Oh, my God. Are you okay?
Fabian.
Oh, my God.
Slammed into the back of a school bus.
Oh, my God.
Two kids were hurt. One seriously critical condition today.
Right here.
So what are we talking about? I mean, it didn't take long to politicize the terrorist attack yesterday in New York City. It's in full swing. This time it's our side. Donald Trump immediately took to Twitter to blame Senator Chuck Schumer for the attacker, Saipov, for being in the country in the first place. Trump tweeted that the murderer came to our country through what was called the Diversity Visa Lottery Program, a Chuck Schumer beauty. It's actually not a Chuck Schumer beauty. Listen, I'll give you the facts in a second. He went on to write, "We're fighting hard for merit-based immigration. No more Democrat lottery systems. We have to get much tougher and much smarter." Schumer fired back with a tweet, "I guess it's not too soon to politicize a tragedy. You've got to be kidding me, coming from Chuck Schumer. Stop it. Both sides, stop it. Chuck Schumer, the king of politicizing tragedy, so please, I don't want to hear it from either of you. Can we be adults? Do you know who signed that bill into law? Chuck Schumer was just one of the co-sponsors. You know who signed that into law? George H.W. Bush. So it's not a Democratic thing. Both sides were involved in that. Instead of typing snarky comments to one another, why don't you start using your platform to talk about Ryan Nash? Ryan Nash was the police officer, routine call when he was faced with an unimaginable situation. He came face to face with Saipov. 28-year-old officer knew what he had to do. Stop the killing spree. He shot him yesterday. Who knows what other atrocities would have occurred if Nash had not stopped the attacker. Can we take a moment and just thank our police officers for being there? Can we be adults and stop the mindless tweeting and focus on what matters most?
It's Wednesday, November 1st. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So I'm going to talk to you, believe it or not, on what matters most. But I want to start with a book that I just finished by Dan Brown. It's called Origin. I was in the bookstore a couple of weeks ago, and I just bought a stack of books, and Origin was one of them. And I don't even know why. I've read two fiction books in the last, 3 years. And those, both of them have been in the last 45 days. This one I read, and I wasn't really even sure why, other than the premise intrigued me, which is a guy like Elon Musk has figured out, you know, where we came from and says that he can disprove God. And I thought, okay, let's see where Dan Brown is going with this one. I know it's going to make the Catholic Church look bad. I got that. What else is he going to do? I urge you to read this book. It's a great Dan Brown book. It's in the same spirit as The Da Vinci Code, et cetera, et cetera. You will spend a lot of time on Google looking things up going, that's not true. Is that true? And believe me, I spent a lot of time on Google, and it's a lot of the stuff in it is true. I mean, it's a real faction book rather than fiction. It's got a lot of truth to it, and you'll learn a lot about history and everything else that you didn't know. I don't want to wreck this, but the discovery is not so great. However, the point that they make on humanity and how life is going to change. Very early on, you're introduced to an AI that is this Elon Musk's right-hand man. And nobody even knows he's AI at the beginning, because he only is calling and, you know, talking to people on the phone or on headsets, et cetera, and everybody thinks he's a real guy. And early on, you find out that he's not a real guy. He's AI. And the premise of the book is there is real trouble coming our way. And I want you to read this book because it puts it into fiction, but in a way that if you can get past some of the religion bashing, which I think is not completely over the top. It's a little annoying at times, but if you can get past that, you will learn a lot on what you should be concerned about. A friend of mine sent me something from what's called Modeling Economics. And this writer, this economist, is worried about the fragmentation of society, along with a few other things. He said, lately, my life has been completely packed with speeches and meetings and in-depth, often lengthy conversations and ongoing research. But I'm always asked, what's on the top of your mind? What are you thinking about? What keeps you up at night? It's become an emotional question for me because the answer doesn't come easily. It's complex and more than a little unsettling. It's evolving out of the research and writing that I am doing about the age of transformation. Now, this guy is he's cut from my same cloth, so you would know. He is not a catastrophist like I am. I always look for the catastrophe in things. I'm the guy who you don't want on the first half of the ride of the Titanic, but you definitely want me, you know, as we're getting the lifeboats. I'm the guy on the way to the iceberg going, this thing is going down and there's not enough lifeboats. Once we hit the iceberg, I'm like, we're going to make it. We're going to be fine. Don't worry. Just everybody get into a lifeboat. I'm an optimistic catastrophist. And he strikes me as the same kind of guy. And he said, we are going to see massive technological changes in the next 20 years. We will see more change and improvement in the next 20 years than we've seen in the last 100. Now, think of that. Remember, it's been almost 18 years, 17 years now since September 11th. It's been 20 years. Think how fast that has gone. We are going to see more technological change in the next 20 years, I contend in the next 10, than we've seen in the last 100. He said, let's start out in the good with the good news. In 1820, some 94% of the world's population lived in extreme poverty. 94% of the world's population lived in extreme poverty. By 1990, that figure was 35%. In 2015, the extreme poverty number was only 9.6%. Think of that. Now, what brought us there? Capitalism. When you can go in 1820 to 94% of the world living in extreme poverty, and it had always been that way, and one thing changes, freedom comes to the world for the first time. Freedom and security for the first time under our Constitution. And now it's at 9.6. 40% of those who remain impoverished live just in two countries, Nigeria and India, both of which are growing rapidly and will see their extreme poverty significantly decrease in the next 20 years. There is research to show that on a global basis, the poor are getting richer faster than any other group. Let me say that again. There is research that shows that on a global basis, the poor are getting richer faster than any other group. If you look beyond the U.S. and Europe, if you don't look beyond the U.S. and Europe, that's not the conclusion you come to. But Africa and Asia, absolutely. The industrial age and free market capitalism, for all of its bumps and warts, has lifted more people out of poverty and extended more lives than as any other single development. The collapse of communism has been a great boon to humanity, even if it is still talked about in favorable ways in Western universities. Now, he talks about the collide that is coming because of jobs. Every new robot replaced 5.6 workers in 2007, and every additional robot per 1,000 workers reduced the percentage of total population employed by 0.34, also reduced wages, every robot, by 0.5%. There is a loss coming of 3.4 million jobs by 2025. Remember, we're talking about industrial robots only, not all robots and any software, especially not AI. The future of work concludes that 90% of all driving in the U.S. will be transportation as a service by 2030. Let me say that again. 90% of all driving in the U.S. will be what's called TAAS, transportation as a service. 90% of all driving. That's an Uber service. The good news is that the average family will save $5,600 a year in transportation costs, keeping an extra $1 trillion in Americans' pockets. Think of the time that will be freed for activities other than driving, not to mention the traffic jams that will be reduced. The authors believe that freeing time now spent commuting to work plus faster transport times will lead to an increase of GDP between $500 million and as much as $2.5 trillion. Of course, governments will lose as much as $50 billion in gasoline taxes as we shift to electric engine and alternative forms of power systems. The bad news is a lot of people will lose their incomes. 228,000 auto repair shops in the country, employing 647,000 workers. That's a minimum data from BLS. When a new car will last for 1 million miles and have fewer than 30 moving parts, what are we going to do in auto repair jobs? The auto industry employs 1.25 million people directly, another 7.25 million indirectly. Not all driving jobs will be lost, but the authors estimate that about 5 million jobs, with a reduction in national income of $200 billion. And if we need fewer cars, the estimate of new vehicle annual unit sales will drop by 70% by 2030 to around 5.6 million vehicles versus the 18 million that will be sold 10 years prior in 2020. So what happens to all of those jobs? He's talking about a massive, massive loss of income and a massive loss of jobs and businesses that are starting to close down. But then he gets to something that is really disturbing, and that is the fragmentation of our society. We'll get to that in a second. Nothing is more essential than protecting your home, but traditional home security can be punishing and an expensive task, and there is a better way to protect your home, and it is SimpliSafe. You ask anybody who's been locked into a long-term security contract and you're on the hook for 3 to 5 years, plus the installation can cost you a fortune. You pay for that system over and over again, and yet you still don't own it. Hardwiring the system tears up the walls in your house. There is a better solution, and it is SimpliSafe, a totally wireless security system with no long-term contract. Your home can be protected and watched 24/7, no hidden fees, and the cost is $15 a month. That's 3 times less than the other guys. So go to SimpliSafeBeck.com right now. Get a special 10% discount when you order today. Now, that discount is on the system, which is unbelievably inexpensive. You're going to be so mad at the alarm companies that you have spent so much money with when you find out what these alarm systems actually cost. This is state-of-the-art, no wiring. Nobody's coming to your house. Yeah, you can install this thing so fast, within 30 minutes. And if you want your security system right away, you can just go to your local Best Buy. They have it. Or you can protect your home in a couple of days. Have it tonight at Best Buy or go online and save the extra 10% at SimpliSafeBeck.com. That's SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Social media is changing us. Is changing us fundamentally. In the Dan Brown book, he comes to the conclusion that the Homo sapien is going to be wiped out by 2050. It's actually a compelling case. It's actually a really compelling case. Now, there's a lot of optimism in that. But when you hear and you read in that book why he's saying that, you're like, you know, I think I can see that. We have to be we have to be smarter than the rest of the world, quite honestly. There's got to be a group of people that are smart enough to go, you know what, I don't want to live this way. I don't like the way the world is going, and I know I'm not alone, and I believe in certain inalienable rights that are self-evident, and I believe them for everybody, even the people I vehemently disagree with, and I can live right next door to them as long as they don't want to change, you know, what I do, and I'm not going to change what they do. We can do this. But this is really hard because we live now with the internet and social media and the media that we consume. It is, we are looking for our own echo chamber. We are looking for the thing. Yesterday we had the guy who was on, he was the head of NPR. And he said, you know what? I didn't know what I didn't know. So I went out and I said, I'm going to ask the tough questions. I'm going to really go out to the people who really know. And he was, you know, he was for gun control. He didn't go to a straw man. He went to John Lott, who is probably the best guy on the facts of gun control than any other person. He completely changed his mind because he went out and he did his own research. We just depend on the people that we surround ourselves with, or the people, the boobs like me that you listen to every day. And you're like, yeah, well, Glenn Beck says, don't take it from me. Do your own homework. Don't believe it because I said it. Figure it out yourself. Do your own homework on things. But we don't do that right now. And social media is allowing us to live in this echo chamber where somebody at CBS can actually say, I don't really feel sorry for those people that were shot in Las Vegas because they're probably all Trump supporters. What? What? Antifa can call for the killing of whites, cops, and we're accepting it simply because they're white. Some people are just because they're black. This is crazy talk from Americans. Crazy talk. It has no place in our society. Not in mainstream society. And it is becoming more and more popular because nobody's listening to each other. And we're demonizing one another. And we're starting to believe the worst instead of saying, wait a minute. What do they mean by that? Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Nobody does that anymore. Don't give them the benefit of the doubt. You read the headline and then you pass it on to a friend with a screed. Can you believe they said? And you know this is true because anybody who has listened to me for a long period of time and they came in hating me, they always go, he's not what you think he is. Why is that? Because nobody on the other side took the time to listen. And how many times did we fail on that? Have we failed on that? We need to listen to one another. And then we just need to unite on a few basic, self-evident principles. All men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain rights. That's it, and we can solve this and move forward.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
What is Bitcoin up to today? Was it 6,500, I think, yesterday?
Yeah. About 6,500 now, yeah. Which is up significantly.
Yes.
Some may remember. We'd like to tell this story in that I think it was March or February of this year. We did a show where we were talking about how crazy this Bitcoin thing was going. And that it had risen all the way to 1,100, mm-hmm. Which was up significantly, mm-hmm. In recent months. And there was these huge profit margins being made. It's now 6,500, so it's up six times essentially since that conversation, which was in March. And when Donald Trump took the escalator, the golden escalator, down to announce his candidacy, which, I mean, does seem like a zillion years ago, but was not. It was only, you know, March 2015. Bitcoin was about $200 a Bitcoin. It is now $6,600. So there was some money to be made there.
Can you compare this to anything else, like a stock? Or
well,
Yeah. Can you compare
Every
it to
Every time
him?
We talk about Bitcoin, people like to compare it to tulips, which...
Oh, I know, I know.
There was the, of course, tulip craze.
If you don't know what this is, in Holland in the 1600s, people decided that tulips could be used as money, tulip bulbs. And people were exchanging tulip bulbs literally for houses. You know, some people said, no, this is really not a good idea. You can't base your currency on tulip bulbs. And they're like, have you seen our tulips?
They're really great.
They're great tulips. And it came crashing down. And
you really don't want a currency that can wither away and die.
No, you don't.
That's
kind of a
bad idea.
And this one is, at least at that one, you in the end had a tulip bulb.
Right,
you have nothing.
So it's a lot. I understand the skepticism. There's really smart people out there who have made a lot of money, billionaires who think this is nuts. I mean, yeah. Warren Buffett thinks it's bad.
He's the guy who comes to mind every time. Because most people can't even explain what Bitcoin is.
Yeah, and it's difficult. I think this would be a good idea for a chalkboard series. If you haven't watched the TV show the last couple of weeks, and this week in particular, we've been doing these chalkboard series trying to explain things that you hear about all the time, but maybe your friends don't understand or you don't know all the deep history about it. And it goes over an entire week. This week was socialism. We went into a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, we talk about socialism and we've talked about it a million times. There's a lot of stuff this week in this series that I had never heard before.
Me too.
And trying to make it a little bit interesting and
trying to make it fun and everything so you can understand it and you can watch it with your kids and teach them what socialism is. And today is part three of the 4-part series, and part three today is on the times that socialism goes bad, and that's always.
Yeah,
and we've left one country out. Because we're saving that for the fourth episode.
Which airs tomorrow.
Airs tomorrow.
So you can see all of them at theblaze.com/TV. It's you know, we've had a lot of people lately telling us that these things are just worth the subscription. This, despite all the other programming that's on, including Pad and everything else that we have. Back to Bitcoin, because I think that would be a good week-long series to kind of explain it and go through to people. Go through the entire process of, you know, what the heck this means. What does it mean for the future of the economy?
So I would say, and I know I'm playing into it. First of all, I'm an investor in Bitcoin, so you just know. I just put a very small amount of money into buying Bitcoins because I think everybody should have something. But literally, I describe this to my friends. Plan a weekend where you and your wife are getting away and you're going to, you know, go and stay at a nice hotel and have dinner out.
Whatever you can afford.
Whatever you can afford. Not where you're putting yourself, but, you know, you've saved up for a couple of months maybe. And you're just going to blow that money and you don't mind blowing that money. Instead of blowing that money on something like that, put it in Bitcoin. Something that you're willing to just lose and walk away and go, well,
fun adventure.
Could have worked.
Yeah.
Because we don't know at this point. And so I know I'm playing this time it's different. But in a way, this time is different because everything is fundamentally changing to going to a virtual world. Everything's going to be a virtual world.
Yeah. And you know, this the technology that's under this is really important, too. And I think that's something we should maybe cover in this week of chalkboards if we wind up doing it, because that is
the blockchain,
the whole blockchain.
It's going to change the world.
Yeah. So one of the things I think is interesting, and this goes on with a report that came out yesterday, that now institutional investors have an opportunity to get into Bitcoin kind of for the first time, because it's been kind of this kind of shady internet thing, right? Like that's kind of the way it's been presented. And they're opening up the futures markets so that actual institutional investors can start putting their money in. What do you have the Bloomberg headline?
Bloomberg, Bitcoin futures could open the floodgates for institutional investors.
I mean, that's a big deal. And it's a big deal. It's one of the reasons why Bitcoin is up so much in the last couple of days. But I think a lot of people look at this and they say it went from 200 to 6,600 in the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. Missed it.
500% this year alone.
Just 500% just this year. Mm-hmm. I've missed it.
No,
it would have been great.
Right? No, you haven't.
Let me give you this stat. And this is an interesting way to think about this. Globally, okay, the entire world, there are about 4 million people who have $100 or more in Bitcoin.
In the entire world.
In the entire world, there are only 4 million people. That is less than 1/10 of 1% of the global population is in Bitcoin right now. If that number goes to 1%, if that number goes higher than that,
5%.
Again, those are people who have $100, which, as I point out, is 1/66 of a Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to $1,000, it's less than 2 million. $10,000, which is obviously a good sized account, but is less than 2 Bitcoins, less than 2 of them, is only 450,000 people on Earth have that. So you're talking 0.1/100th of a percent of the global population. There's an incredible amount of growth. If you were to get into it right now and you put $100 in, you are in the top 1/10th of 1%, the first adopters of this technology. And it's so who knows where it's going to go? And as I said a million times, it absolutely could be zero tomorrow. I have no idea.
For someone to not have $100 to $500 in Bitcoin, for you not to have it, I don't understand it. I mean, I understand if you just
you
like,
don't have the money,
well,
don't
I
have
don't have $100. I get it. I get it. But if you can go out and blow $100, you know, on a date night, for you not to not take that date once and put it in Bitcoin, I don't understand it. Because, and you're right, the psychology says, well, you've missed it because it's now 6,000. No, if this is going to work, it's going to be a large percentage of the population that has Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
You get into 5%, your $100 is worth, I don't even know how much. You get into 10% of the population. You get into this is a country adopts this. All of a sudden, it's a totally different world.
Yeah.
A totally different world.
And you know, we talk about if it's, let's say it drops by 80%. You put $100 in, it drops by 80%. You have now $20. And that sucks, right? But you still, you have $20 and that sucks. But if you had just the growth that we've had in the last 2 years, you'd go from $100 to $3,300, right? That's a nice, that would be nice, right? We'd all enjoy that.
Yes.
And, you know, those sorts of things are incredible. We have this kind of running joke with Pat and Jeffy. Pat, of course, from Pat Gray Unleashed here in The Blazed, that you can watch at theblaze.com/TV. They always kept, every time it would go up, they go, oh, I should have bought it at $2,000. I should have bought it at $2,500. Oh, I should have bought it at $3,300. That instinct is understandable. And I don't want Pat or Jeffy to get into it because as soon as they get into it, I know it's going to go to zero.
That's right.
But the idea that you're too late and have missed this, it
is
doesn't
not.
Seem real at this point. We don't know. I mean, who knows? But this is so, remember, this isn't even available to institutional investors yet.
That's how early it is. This is literally like investing in something like AT&T in 1890. Probably bigger than that.
Now, there are probably companies in 1890 that had great runs and then went to zero.
Yes.
Right? There were
yes.
many of them. So
yes.
it does not guarantee anything. We're not yes. investment. I don't know yeah. any of that
Well, I'm
stuff.
Just saying you shouldn't invest in this unless you're willing to walk
unless
away from it.
Unless you're willing
I mean,
to lose
this
it.
This is darn near crazy town. You know what this is? This is like saying I want to invest in Elon Musk's city on Mars. Okay, well, it might happen, and I believe if anybody's going to do it, he's going to do it,
mm-hmm.
and the technology is changing, and I don't know what the next 10 years brings. You know what, Elon? I'm not going to give you $100,000. I might give you $100,000.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I want to be a part of something that is going to the moon and is life-changing and game-changing for humanity and would be really, really good. But at this point, I'm not sure you're actually not going to blow up on the launch pad.
Yeah, no, that's true. Know? And I will say, your point is accurate, I think, if you're talking about investing in Bitcoin in 2011, right? Like, this is, he's got a bunch of buildings up there. There's a bunch of workers already living on Mars. Like, there are some businesses opening. There's a new restaurant downtown that serves delicious Martian treats.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on already. It's not a fully built city, but the city, he's proven you can live there
well,
already.
I think it's actually more accurate to say we know he's not going to blow up on the launch pad.
Yeah.
We know that he can land them, make reusable rockets. I mean, the next step is the moon for him. And I believe he's going to get to the moon. You know, there's lots of steps in between here and Mars, but he's knocked all of them out so far. The next one's a big one. He's got to get to the moon. But it looks like he's one guy that could do it. It's the same with Bitcoin. There's so many steps between here and 5 or 10% of the population using this as currency. But this one looks like it has the best chance of anybody to do it. Lots of steps in between, but $100, foolish not to have $100 in it. Think about if you put $100 in and you wanted to pull it out now, you know, as Stu said, just this growth, you'd have $3,300. What could you do to pay off the debt? You had $100.
Yeah.
Pay off your debt.
And again, you go back to the poor guy in 2010 who made the first purchase with Bitcoin when he spent 10,000 Bitcoins.
Oh my gosh.
For two Papa John's pizzas.
That pizza now would be valued at?
Let's see. In May, it was $20 million for the two pizzas. So that was, in May, it was way less. I mean, I haven't done the math on it yet.
Well, six times.
I don't know what it was in May exactly. But 10,000, it was 10,000 Bitcoins. It's 6,600 now. So $66 million. I mean, those are, like, pizza is really good.
For a pizza. Can you imagine what that kid is now thinking? Dear God, what did I do?
Well, who knows how many he kept.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Paying off debt can take forever and it piles up fast, but it doesn't have to. If you own a home and you have some equity, refinancing to consolidate and pay off your debt can make life a lot easier. But what's the right choice for your situation? Well, a 10-minute call can change everything for you. You call the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. Why is it important that I say they're salary-based? Because they are not incentivized to shove you into a loan or even sell you anything. You can call them and work with them, and they're going to be paid exactly the same whether you buy something or not. That's the kind of person that I want giving me advice, especially when it revolves around my financial goals. Now, whatever the case is, American Financing can review your current mortgage and look for options that lower your monthly payments or help you achieve a better financial status, whatever it is. American Financing, straightforward, effortless mortgage experiences from American Financing. Call 1-800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440 or AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Stu's been obsessing on this for about an hour now.
I've designated many of our resources to make sure that I'm not completely insane.
Okay, so Stu came in this morning and said, you wouldn't believe what Chris Cuomo said. I'm listening to Chris Cuomo this morning, and I'm like, well, why? And he said, the terrorist attacks yesterday are the largest in New York City. So since 9/11, and actually I said, well, they are. And he said, no, he didn't say New York City, though. He said the largest since 9/11.
Yeah. So we have the original Chris Cuomo worst terror attack by any chance. This is the initial one that we found
last hour.
Mm-hmm. We are in the shadow of the World Trade Center, a place that stands as a symbol of resolve, but also such profound victimization. This is the deadliest terror attack in New York City since 9/11. That bears remembering.
And so I said to Stu, you're wrong.
Right. And so then someone sent me on Twitter, Chris Cuomo had tweeted, deadliest attack since 9/11, once again underneath an absolutely cloudless, perfect sky. So again, so he did say it. So here is another clip of him saying a very similar thing. This is the thing I heard. Here's Chris Cuomo, part two, worst terrorist attack.
Here we are once again in downtown Manhattan. This, of course, right in the shadow of the Freedom Tower. This is right where 9/11 struck us. And now we have the deadliest successful, if you want to call it, attack since 9/11. Another day with a perfect sky destroyed.
So
he did not say New York City. Now, he said he was in Manhattan, but he did not
He didn't specify. So
he gave him a benefit of the doubt. That's maybe what he meant, maybe, but it's not what he said and not what he tweeted.
Yeah.
Both his what he said on the air and what he tweeted. And then later on, he said, if we have part three available real quick, it's about 10, 18 seconds. Chris Cuomo, part three, it's not 9/11.
This really takes you back. The phone calls from people, you know, who couldn't find their loved ones, the cell towers or whatever. They weren't able, you know, maybe there was a flood of traffic. They couldn't get through. People with their kids in that school. It's not 9/11. It's nothing like 9/11 in terms of the scope of devastation that we suffered that day.
There we go.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Here we go again. Another statue, another cross, this time under siege for the crime of being visible on land owned and maintained by the state. This time it is the Peace Cross in Bladensburg, Maryland. Now, why is the cross even in the news? Because the battle over it may end up in the Supreme Court, and the decision could affect similar memorials all over the country. Earlier this year, three-judge panel in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit ruled 2-1 that the Peace Cross is unconstitutional. They say that it violates the First Amendment by having a primary effect of endorsing religion and excessively entangles the government in religion. Does nobody understand the First Amendment? The Peace Cross is a 40-foot-tall World War I memorial that commemorates 49 soldiers that were killed from Prince George's County in Maryland. The monument was built in 1925, and, you know, we're not turning out serial killers in Prince George's County since 1925. Everybody seemed to be okay with it. It's funded by the families and the American Legion. For 92 years, this cross has entangled the government and religions in ways that has wreaked untold havoc on the minds and the hearts of Maryland citizens. Or not. Whenever somebody even looks at it, do they feel enslaved by the American theocracy, the rays shooting out of the cross, zapping their minds and making them head to their nearest church to worship? Have you been to Prince George's County lately? It's obviously very ineffective. But this kind of manipulation has got to be shut down. Opponents of the Peace Cross are not actually worried about protecting the First Amendment. This is a case, I believe, of anti-Christian bigotry. The female manager of the pawn shop near the Peace Cross said, "We heard they may be taking it down. I just disagree with it. I mean, it doesn't bother anybody around here. I worry nobody's going to remember them," meaning the World War I soldiers. You can't remember something you cannot see, which is exactly the outcome the opponents of the Peace Cross are hoping for. Are you aware at all of the Pact of Forgetting? It was a Spanish political decision in 1975. We're going to make a pact to forget about Franco. Why is fascism on the rise in Europe? One of the reasons: people in Spain never learned about Franco and the death camps and the slaves that he had built Spain. If you forget something, you are destined to repeat it.
It's Wednesday, November 1st. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Tristan Harris, the founder of Time Well Spent. He is a magician when he was a kid. And a Google design ethicist. He has a great blog on Medium, how technology is hijacking your mind. He says, "I'm an expert on how technology hijacks our psychological vulnerabilities. It's why I spent the last 3 years as a design ethicist at Google, caring about how to design things in a way that defends a billion people's minds from getting hijacked." We use technology and we focus optimistically on all the things it does. But I want to show you that it can also do the exact opposite. It can hijack and exploit your mind's weakness. He's here to talk to us a little bit about the way the Russians did that and what's happening on Capitol Hill today. Tristan, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Glenn, for having me back.
You bet. Great conversation last time. Let's continue it. Let's start Facebook, Google, Twitter testifying on Capitol Hill today. And this makes me really nervous for some reason, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly why.
Well, yeah, they're testifying on Capitol Hill, and the question really that Americans need to be asking them is, you know, what is their role in enabling, essentially what's been discovered to be just totalizing Russian propaganda? I mean, it went from them first saying that it was about $100,000 in ads, which is, you know, a very small amount of ads, not a big deal, right? But really, that hid the bigger picture, which is that there were 470 Facebook groups that they created and pages that basically spread content that was shared organically, meaning just by all of us, by Americans, without even knowing it. And it ultimately affected 126 million Americans, which is 90% of the U.S. voter base that voted in the last election. So, I think the real question we have to ask is, given that the business model of these platforms is spreading engaging information, and the Russians basically figured out how to, you know, manufacture a bunch of deliberately polarizing content. I mean, they created groups around veterans' rights, around immigration. They created pro-police groups, pro-Black Lives Matter groups. They created groups on both sides. And they did it because they want us so we can't talk to each other. And they were able to do that with Facebook.
So, Tristan, this is something that we've been warning about since before Donald Trump came down that escalator and said he was going to be president. We had been warning for years that the Russians are deliberately trying to infiltrate and control the conversation and split us apart as a nation. Nobody really wanted to pay attention. Everybody denied it. And I think still there's a lot of people that will listen to what you just said and say, oh, yeah, big deal. So it was. No, it really is a big deal. However, how do we want Google and Facebook to start controlling or deciding who gets to speak and who doesn't?
Yeah, well, this is incredibly difficult area because essentially what we've created is systems that have exponential impact, right? I mean, there are apparently, as of yesterday, we found out in the Judiciary Committee, there's 5 million advertisers on Facebook. So if some of them are, say, China or North Korea or, or Russia, how would we know? You can't vet 5 million advertisers, mm-hmm. right? So we have this problem where essentially by creating exponential impact that has, you know, the ability to take one advertiser and send their message to 10 people in a very specific zip code, and there's no way, given all of those different ad buys happening literally 100 million times a second, right? When you load a page on Facebook, you know, in that snap of your fingers, there's this instant auction and millions of people are competing for your attention. And Facebook can't look with human beings at every single one and say, is that Russia? Is that North Korea? So we have this real problem on our hands where we basically created this kind of runaway artificial intelligence system, except instead of Terminator, it's basically saying it was given this goal of what can I show this human being that will capture their attention? And it works really, really well, but it's not aligned with our democracy because what's good for capturing just your attention basically is not the same as what's good at capturing everyone else's attention. So it takes society like a paper shredder through, takes the whole society as an input and spits out this sort of shredded society that only listens to its own information as an output. So what we really need to do is change the structure of Facebook in terms of who's paying. Because if we're the product, which we are, you know, our eyeballs are sold to advertisers, which means that their business model is basically to keep us addicted so that they can keep selling our eyeballs to advertisers. If with that arrangement, we're kind of screwed unless we change who's paying who. One option is to have people pay Facebook, but we're not going to be very happy about that because we've been getting it for free. And another option to have governments pay Facebook, but that's not, that doesn't feel right either. The challenge is we find ourselves indebted into a situation where, you know, we don't like the current situation. We don't want to regulate free speech, but we also don't like the status quo, because we honestly, Glenn, I really believe we can't survive when the business model is basically catering to an individual's attention, because the most difficult thing for society is we have to be able to talk to each other and basically have open minds and say, well, what do you believe and what do I believe? And Facebook basically shreds that process because we don't even listen to the same information anymore.
I'm also concerned that, you know, the government has pretty much stayed out of Silicon Valley for a long time, mainly because they're a bunch of dolts that don't even understand technology. I mean, I've talked to people in Washington and their eyes glaze over the minute you start talking about anything. I mean, at my level, and they just don't understand it. You're just like, oh, dear God, we're in trouble. But, you know, now they're starting to pay attention because it affects them. They see the power of how it can affect people. And once the government gets involved, they will make sure that it helps them. I mean, they have different goals. So what could Google or Facebook suggest that would be good for the Republic?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we have this challenge, right? We have thousands of people that go to work today at Facebook, and whatever their choices are, they basically are designing the information flows that affect 2 billion people. There's 2 billion people who use Facebook. That's, as we said last time, that's more than the number of followers of Christianity, 1.3 billion of which use it every day. And so when they're designing the information flows, it's by design, it's going to influence all of those people's thoughts. Right, because they set up basically whether or not the top of your newsfeed is your high school friends, or it's the baby photos, or it's Donald Trump every day, right? I mean, we have to have an honest conversation about a few things. One is, for example, bots. What people don't realize is that up to 15% in the academic literature, they say on Twitter are bots. 15% of its users are bots.
Explain that for people who don't know what bots are.
Yeah, bots are basically things that when you click on a page on Twitter, you know, you see Glenn Beck or whatever, and it looks like it's you, it's got your photo, but you click on someone else, and it looks like they're, I don't know, Asian American living in Kansas or something like that. And they're actually not. It's just a fake photo, and it's a fake profile, and the profile's run by a computer, which is called a bot. And the thing is that 15% of Twitter's users, claimed users, are actually bots. Now, the problem is that there's this ability to create manufactured consensus. So when you see, you know, someone tweet something, whether it's the president or it's someone else, you can have hundreds of thousands of people like it that are not people, but they're actually bots. So you can manufacture the sense that, you know, these certain messages are popular. You can also make conspiracies become trending. And if you make it trend, you can make it true. So the reason I'm bringing this up is, one thing we can do is make sure that we make it, we should have total disclosure for bots. So just think of it like a Blade Runner law. I mean, if you're seeing Blade Runner, which is out right now, it's all about these, you know, how do we know that someone is a human or a bot or a cyborg? And what you want is when you're on Twitter, having everything that's a bot to be labeled as such. I mean, why should our discourse be poisoned by essentially bots, especially when in this case, many of them were actually run by Russia? And Twitter has been crawling with bots, and the reason they don't shut them down is their current stock price is dependent on telling Wall Street, hey, this is how many users we have. So they can't shut down all of these other bots.
Holy
because
cow.
Then their user counts drop, right? So that's why we have to have a conversation about why these companies won't really regulate themselves, self-police themselves. Now, I'm not a fan of regulation. I just want to make that really clear. I'm not trying
neither,
to get the
neither government
am I. Culture. I'm with you. But the problem is the status quo is also not really survivable. We need to be able to find some way that these companies have to do more. And that given the fact that Facebook dug its heels in the ground for the last 6 months, and it, why are we only finding out the day before the hearings today that 90% of Americans were affected by Russian propaganda? Now, you may not believe that, but that's literally the truth from the mouth of Facebook, and they've got all the data.
So, Tristan, I want to go back on one thing that you just said. You said this is not survivable. That's not hyperbole coming from you. Can you explain?
I, Well, you know, I think like you, I believe in free speech, and I believe in our need to be able to talk to each other and ask what is important for our society and where do we want to go? I mean, if you have kids, you want to ask, like, what do I want the world my kids are going to live in to be? Now, if we can't talk to each other, we can't make those decisions together. And the problem with Facebook is that its business model is dividing society, not deliberately, but because it's more profitable to capture your attention by showing things that just cater to your individual mind, right? Just your specific mind. By default, it means that every person is only looking at a feed that's related to their world. So it's shredding society into these echo chambers where we only see our own beliefs. And I think the danger of that is if we can't talk to each other, then there's violence. And I don't want to go there, but the point here is we need Facebook and these other companies to be basically, instead of designing to shred our attention and capture it individually, to be designing for the most empowering and enhanced public square we've ever built. Because it is the new public square. It's not just a product we use. Given the scale of people who use these products, it is the public square. Now, the question is, who's going to pay for that? And also, who's to say what the public square is? You know, we want these, you know, young California guys at Facebook designing the public square for 2 billion people. So it really brings in huge, huge questions about governance and how do you have what someone called, you know, these companies are like private superpowers. They don't have militaries, but they have more influence, certainly on people's daily thoughts than, you know, than any government in history that I know.
They also, at least Apple, owns more treasuries than most countries do. So they have more T-bills that they could dump if they wanted to get nasty. As well. I mean, they are amassing enormous amounts of power. Tristan, go ahead.
No, go on.
I just want to thank you for being on with us and hope we can continue our conversation. It's extremely important what you're talking about and what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Tristan Harris, founder of Time Well Spent. So it's only a matter of time before your car or truck breaks down. And if you're lucky, it happens while you still have the manufacturer warranty and the repair is covered. Like my new pickup. I just bought a brand new pickup and within 90 miles, check engine light went on. What? Lucky for me, it was a sensor and it was covered. But what happens when you're not covered anymore? I have an old diesel pickup truck, 150,000 miles on it. And, you know, that thing goes down and it's going to cost me thousands of bucks. And it's in really, really good shape. You know, baby it to make sure that it lasts until I want to drive that thing till the doors fall off. That's why I have extended coverage from carshield.com. Because a new engine or transmission is going to cost $500. A new sensor, $1,000. Skip the hassle. CarShield will make your whole process easy. You select your favorite mechanic. You can do the work at the dealership. There's no check waiting, you know, waiting for the check to come in the mail. They get the mechanic paid directly, so you don't have to worry about it. CarShield's administrators also give you the VIP treatment, 24/7 roadside assistance, and a rental car while yours is in the shop, so you're not left out in the cold. If your car is 3 to 12 years old, it doesn't mean you have to pay the high repair bills. CarShield has paid out close to $2 billion in claims, and they're ready to help you. So save yourself a ton of frustration and a ton of money. Get the extended vehicle service protection before it's too late. Call 800-823-9888. That's 800-823-9888. You mention my name, Beck, and you can visit carshield.com and save an extra 10%. That's carshield.com, promo code Beck. Deductible may apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Let's go to Daniel. Hello, Daniel. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Oh, hey. How's it going, Glenn?
Very good. What's up?
I just had a simple, easy question, actually. You guys were talking about Bitcoin, how pretty much everybody should have at least $100 worth.
Yeah.
I was just wondering who you guys use to invest with.
Well, we both use different people. I use Zapo, XAPO.com, Zapo.
Yeah, and I use Coinbase, which is, those are the two I would say most seemingly most prominent ones.
Yeah. Coinbase, I chose Zappo. Coinbase is based here in the United States, and Zappos is an American company, but they based it over in Switzerland because they don't necessarily trust that the United States government isn't going to go, you know what, we're done with this.
Yeah, it's so, there's arguments for both. I mean, I think that's for Coinbase, I mean, it's big venture capital money. Yeah. Andreessen Horowitz is behind it, and there's a lot
really
of money
great.
In it.
Yep.
And they're really good. They also offer a couple of different options, not just Bitcoin, but a couple of the other currencies as well, Ethereum and Litecoin. But
either way, $100, everybody should have it. Thank you very much. Do I have time quickly for Mark? Mark, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Glenn. Pleasure to speak to you. I just wanted to touch back on the Facebook Twitter thing and offer kind of a counterpoint. I would submit unto you that we, as consumers of social media, are responsible for educating ourselves and each other on recognizing propaganda when we see it.
Yeah.
Tagging it as such, as opposed to trying to put it off onto the government or the Silicon Valley to do it for us. You know, let's police ourselves up and recognize it and call it out when we see it.
So, Mark, you're absolutely right. And it's, in fact, the exact conversation we had when we got off the air after Tristan was on. And I want to continue that because there is one piece that you're missing in that, and we'll give it to you next.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So we're just having a conversation with a guy who used to be the Google ethicist at Google, and he left to start his own company because he figures they're not really listening, and they need to. And what we're headed for is a real disaster of earth shattering proportions. And we had them on because Google and Apple and Facebook are testifying today in front of Congress, and Congress is going to get involved and they're going to want to regulate because now they've realized, oh, wait a minute, this affects our jobs and our re-election, so we better regulate. And it's going to get worse before it gets better because they're not going to do anything that fixes it. And I don't believe in regulation, especially on the internet, but it is coming now. And it's coming because of the Russians. Now, here's the problem. The Russians put out all kinds of propaganda, and a caller just called in a minute ago and said, well, you know what it needs is people need to think. And you're right. People do need to think. They need to just have a moment of doubt when they see something that is so juicy and so good and is so bad for the other side, they need to go, wait a minute, let me check this out. So we have to be an educated populace to be able to have this kind of access to information, and we're not. However, with that being said, the bots and AI, they are getting so good that it is not too long before even the educated are not going to be able to tell the difference. And it, you know, AI is going to get very good at manipulating us. And I don't know how to solve that one. But it is something that we should be having a conversation about, but we never do.
The only solution is to disconnect from all society and live in a hut on a shack on a side of a mountain somewhere. You have that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to do that. Pat Gray is here. You willing to?
Oh yeah. Like move to Madagascar, island off the coast of Africa.
Nice, oh, Madagascar
safe place.
It's beautiful. Safe. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
This
healthy
time of year.
Healthy.
Very healthy with the Black Plague. It's only affected 1,300 people though. So.
And that's a kind of an exciting number because I think last time we really saw this was about 1,300.
Yes. Because there are things you can do to stop the Black Plague now.
Yes.
These people might be surprised that maybe they shouldn't dig up their dead relatives and dance with them. People who have died from the Black Plague, they often dig them up. There's some sort of, it's called
dance with
Famada Hana. And it's a tradition in Madagascar that they dig up their dead relatives who've died of whatever, but in this case, usually the Black Plague.
And dance with them.
And they dance with them. And then they rebury them. Kind of leave them in the tomb or the grave.
Yeah, but then you're not hanging with them at all.
That's true.
Well, you know, that's,
what happens?
That is true.
But what happens if you really need a dance partner?
Yeah.
Maybe you dance with some of the living. I was thinking
they're not there.
Maybe it's time to teach some of these people to do the hustle. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's dated, but not deadly.
Right. Okay.
Maybe the boot scoot boogie might be a good idea right now. Uh-huh. Or, you know, they could hop and bob to the crocodile rock. But this digging up your dead people and dancing with them should probably stop.
That's okay. They leave that off the travel brochure.
yes, they do.
In Madagascar. So now the Black Plague is now starting to spread.
So now it's spreading, and the WHO at the UN is warning Kenya, Ethiopia, South Africa, Mozambique, Tanzania, 9 more countries that are being infected with people who've danced with their dead relatives and then gone abroad. And so the Black Plague is spreading again through Africa. Isn't that wonderful?
But we can cure it, right? Can't we cure the Black Plague now?
I think antibiotics help quite a bit, as they, you know, do with most diseases. I think it's curable, but
the system in Madagascar does not have Obamacare, so they're not going to, I mean, they can't be cured by almost any disease kills them.
And you know what's weird is we have Obamacare, and someday we're not going to be able to be cured of anything either.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sure everything will turn out okay. That's the one way to look at it. That's kind of terrifying.
The Black Plague?
Yeah, it's not good. I'm going to say it's not good.
I read that story last night, and I'm like, the Black Plague? What is this,
Europe in, like you said, 1300? Where was it 30 million people died, they think? They think half the population of Europe died from the Black Plague. Half the population. So it's pretty deadly if you don't treat it properly. All you need are antibiotics. So I don't know why we're not getting them antibiotics. I don't know why they're not taking them.
Please tell me that we do pay for their birth control, though. At least we do that. At least
we may not. You know what? We may not. We may not allow ourselves to give them antibiotics unless they accept Planned Parenthood and abortion.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Yes.
We actually do that in some African countries.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's just interesting to look at the difference, right? I mean, like, look at what the rest of the world is actually dealing with. And then we have our politicians telling us that if we do not pay for birth control, which costs $4 a month at Walmart, it's the equivalent of genocide against women.
Yeah.
And then this is what people are actually dealing with around the world. The Black freaking Plague is returning.
Well, you remember the testimony of what's her name that caused Rush so much trouble because he said something about her.
Sandra Fluke.
Yeah, Sandra Fluke. Yeah. She claimed that her friend had paid $3,500 a year for birth control. We figured that would be like 84,000 condoms or something.
Right.
You know, that's like sex 18 times a day.
Assuming that she was probably spending it on some other form, but it does. That was not a requirement, right? Yes. Because, I mean, that's
not necessarily 18,000 different partners.
No, not necessarily.
Yeah. It's true.
Could be the same partner several times.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, I mean, I guess there are high, you know, I mean, are there $300 a month birth control? I mean, it's possible. I know Walmart, for example, just the pill, which is the standard one, and it may, you know, maybe that's not right for everybody. I don't know all the details of it, but I mean, they were at least for a long time offering it for $4 a month. I don't know what their current price is, but it's
$3,000.
Really,
$3,600.
Well, she was
there.
Right.
You go.
She was right.
Yeah,
she was right.
So stop with your hate. Did you guys see Jeremy Piven?
Jeez, I mean, every day, somebody else.
Well, and the director.
Every day.
Brett Ratner.
Dustin Hoffman.
What?
Yeah, Dustin Hoffman's being accused by a woman of sexual harassment. I mean, pretty bad, too. He did it often. But it was 30 years ago. Again, a lot of these are from the 80s.
Yeah, a real long time ago.
Yeah.
Dustin Hoffman.
Hoffman.
I didn't hear that one.
What did he do?
He continually grabbed her butt. He propositioned her. He was disgusting around her, talking to her about sex and about sex. And continually grabbing.
I don't know why this doesn't work with more women.
Right?
Yeah, it's not a good practice.
What guys
think that works?
You don't appreciate it when I just grab you in a sexual place?
And talk disgusting things?
How picky are these women today?
I know. And 30 years ago.
Yes. They were even...
So it was one woman?
Yeah, so far. But others are going to come forward. Because if he was like that, it wasn't just one person he's doing it to.
Yeah, it usually comes from a bunch of people all
his
at the same
statement
time.
Also was similar to Kevin Spacey's.
He's
well,
gay?
Yeah, I don't remember that, but if I did it, I'm sorry.
But that's it? I know, but it's an interesting thing.
Yeah,
but what do you say? Because let's just say,
yeah,
at some point, we all know this is going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone will be falsely accused of this. Let's say maybe it hasn't happened yet. At some point, it will happen, right? Somebody will be falsely accused because of this phenomenon going on right now. What the hell do you say about it? Let's say you're that person.
I think you say what Bill says. I didn't do that. That's a lie. That's a lie.
What's amazing is
but then you're accused of attacking the victims when they're not victims if you didn't do it, right? You can't win because I think what... Let's just say, I don't know, you know, Spacey certainly seems like he definitely did something wrong, but again, I'm basing that off these statements of his, which are like, I don't remember it, because you don't want to necessarily, I think what they're trying to do is, they don't want to accuse these victims of being liars, because then they'll be accused of attacking a victim.
So Pat, right. let's just say, in my drinking days, I never behaved this way, ever.
Absolutely not.
Never behaved this way ever.
We were together all the time, and I never saw it once.
Right. So, but let's just say, in my drinking days, somebody could come and say, you did this. I would say, never. Mm-hmm. Never, ever, 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 ever did I do that. However, if I would have been out more with more blackouts, I would go, well, I don't think so. I never did that. I can't imagine. But if it did, I was, an alcoholic and I was having blackouts and I...
Right. And then everyone would immediately assume you were completely
right.
Guilty.
And then everyone would say that.
Yeah, they would. Yes, they would.
And it may be true in every one of these cases. We have no idea, right?
I think you're right. If somebody hasn't already been falsely accused, it will happen.
So...
It will.
So,
what do you do?
At what point, too, do you start to say, well, there's not going to be anybody left in Hollywood?
Right. I mean, there had...
It's coming pretty soon.
So, big director Brett Ratner today, an NPR editor, was accused of it as well, who used to work at the New York Times. So, you think the big thing, three things you're going to see here are media, Washington, and Hollywood, right? Hollywood's already, down this road. The media we've seen, with Halperin...
Where's Washington...
You got to believe Washington's coming, right?
I said that yesterday. Are you shocked? We know people in Washington who tell us stories.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing coming out on these guys?
There was one woman who, one of the representatives in California said when she was a staffer, she was harassed. And then someone pointed out that one of her current staffers has also been accused of harassment.
Wow.
It's just, I don't know what you even, at some point, something's going to give here. I mean, it happened in the college arena where it got so completely ridiculous. We are only, a year or two away from this Rolling Stone story where we all vividly remember this incredible news cycle where every college student in America was a rapist for a couple months.
Yeah.
And then we all found out that that wasn't true at all, and they had to pay millions and millions of dollars to the people who were accused in that story. And that is pretty recent. These things do happen. And it seemed as if we were all kind of looking at this and saying, okay, well, we got to be careful on this. There's got to be due process. We can't just let these kangaroo courts happen in colleges. That's not the right way to handle this. And what we've done now, and for many very good motivations, have gone the opposite way and have gotten rid of the kangaroo courts, and now it's absolutely no due process at all.
Yeah.
No, we don't even
you just go down
get
in flames
the
immediately.
Story from I mean, the other person. You get immediately fired a day later.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Piven's accuser sounds pretty credible, but I don't know anything about her.
Right.
And it's one.
Yeah.
It's one.
Yeah. Did you read that there is an actor fairly young actor who is saying that there isn't a boy in Hollywood or a young man in Hollywood who hasn't encountered predatory behavior by actors and directors. Yes. So the male homosexual angle is going to get big, too, I think. I think either we're going to hear a lot about that.
Geez. Bet you not.
You don't think so? You think that swept that part under the rug?
Yeah. I bet you not.
Maybe you're right, because nobody's talking about it much yet. And he said virtually everybody has been abused. Every young boy coming up and every young man. That's amazing, if that's true.
The gay agenda, if you will, I think we'll do everything they can. Look how they came out against Kevin Spacey and say, how dare you?
Yeah. Right.
How dare you say that? Yeah, because that's something that people have they fought really hard to break that.
Yes,
and say no, that's a pervert. That's not a homosexual. That's a total pervert. And I think that one's going to be hard because that will have so much political correct stuff all the way around it. And I wonder if it's going to happen in Washington because of the, I mean, everyone has told me House of Cards is exactly true, with an exception of possibly the murders.
I mean, okay.
Possibly. All right.
And in the Clinton's case,
no.
You don't even exclude that.
Go away. Thank you, Pat.
More of Pat Gray Unleashed coming up here in just a few moments on the Blaze Radio and TV network.
The number of Americans preparing for emergencies has soared, and it's a good thing. We should all take a moment and seeing, what's happening in the world and say, what's the best way to prepare and when should I prepare? And that's when things are calm, right now. Preparedness and being more self-reliant is a journey. If you haven't started down this road, you need to right now. The first step is the most important, and My Patriot Supply has that first step. All you have to do is go to preparewithglenn.com or call 1-800-200-7163, and you can get 102 servings of survival food for $99. That's less than a buck per serving. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 102 servings, less than a dollar per serving. 800-200-7163. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, preparewithglenn.com, 800-200-7163.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So we went trick-or-treating last night. Mm-hmm. Did you go?
I did.
Get anything good?
Yes, lots of stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
I was giving out Halls and Sucrets.
That's always good. People love Sucrets. They just love the Sucrets.
They love
it. Actually, not on this list. 538 did a poll of the best and worst candies for Halloween.
Yeah.
And matched up 86 candies against each other. Mm-hmm. Top five Snickers, four Kit Kat, three Twix, and people love the Reese's. Number two, Reese's Miniatures. Number one, Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Yeah, Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
It's a good number one,
I think. No Sucrets in the top five.
No. In fact, and let's go look at the bottom five here. Fifth from the bottom, Super Bubble. It's a weird one to get because it gets really hard when you get it for Halloween. Fourth from the bottom, Chiclets.
Oh, my gosh.
Third.
Still giving? They're making those?
I guess they are.
Yeah.
Third from the bottom, Boston Baked Beans. Second, Nickel Nip. And the worst is Good and Plenty. It's not a shock.
Glenn Beck.